RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You can also listen to our broadcast every day on frequencies of 15150 kHz, 9525 kHz, and 11785 kHz. Or listen to audio on demand at en.voi.co.id.
Hello, listener. Welcome back to our English program of Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Today's edition will bring you first our news, followed by commentary, Today in History, Focus and News in Brief. We'll continue our segment with Indonesian Wonder and Miscellany. To conclude our program for today, we'll present you our daily segment, Music Corner. That's our program summary for today. This is Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Stand by now for the news.
Voice of Indonesia with the news.
Here is the news read by Rahmana. First, the headlines. The World Bank announced Indonesian economy to grow 5.3% in 2016. Defense Minister opens the defense program. More Egyptians to learn Indonesian. Now the news in detail. Chief Economist of the World Bank for Indonesia, Nadim Diop, predicted Indonesian gross domestic product GDP would expand 5.3% in 2016. However, he said that the growth will be followed with risk. Speaking in Jakarta on Tuesday, Nadim said that the risks include U.S. central bank raising interest rate, economic slowdown in major trading partners such as China, and the private sector remains weak on falling value of rupiah. Moreover, there is also risk from El Nino phenomenon. According to Nadim, the impact of El Nino could be a surge up to 10% in rice price in 2015. The hardest hit by the price rise would be low-income people, who spend most of their income for food. Therefore, Nadim said that it is important to support development of small enterprises and reformation of regulation and cut red tape to boost investment and exports. He said the government should agree to address the development of the manufacturing and tourism sector. With strong economic growth, the country will be able to prevent its current account deficit from widening. Defense Minister Riam Michel Rachidu officially opened State Defense Program, which was attended by 200 cadres in Jakarta on Tuesday. In his speech, Defense Minister Riam Michel said that the end of the program was mentality building to make people of Indonesia have awareness to love the country, be loyal and ready to sacrifice for the nation and state. He hopes through the program, cadres could spread what they learned from it to community members as part of mental revolution. Defense Minister Misa expressed pride to the cadres, calling them as a state defense ambassador who will explain the essence of both sides as a state defense to the people. He told cadres to be disciplined and attend the whole session and apply what they learned in their daily lives. Egyptian interest to learn Indonesian language is higher. This was stated by Education and Culture Attaché of the Embassy of Republic of Indonesia in Cairo, Egypt, Fahmi Lukman, after officially opening the new class of Indonesian language program for the people of Egypt in Indonesian Cultural Center on Tuesday. He explained since it has been opened and managed seriously in 2009, Indonesian language course in Indonesian Cultural Center, Cairo, has produced over 1,400 alumni. According to him, in the fourth term in 2015, the number of registered participants was 150 persons. Insert Borgias. And in the context of Egyptian interest in learning Indonesian language, the Egyptian people are very enthusiastic. Until today, the number of learners who studied Indonesian in Indonesian Cultural Center is 1,400 or more. And now the next terms of new registration has reached 150 people who have already registered to participate and wish to learn Indonesian language. Tutup. According to Pahmi, the Egyptian had interest to learn Indonesian language in the first place is because Indonesian language is very easy to learn. He had the Indonesian language easily learned by Egyptian because there is a lot of Arabic vocabulary absorbed into Indonesian language. Pahmi also pointed out that the Egyptian had interest in learning Indonesian language is one aspect of Indonesian cultural diplomacy progress. It will also support Indonesian tourism. This news is coming to you from the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. The Denmark Queen Margaret II and her husband Prince Consort Hendrik kicked off their first visit to Indonesia at Tanjung Priok Port in Jakarta on Tuesday. During the visit, the royal couple met several officials from the government, such as Coordinating Minister for Maritime Affairs Rizal Ramli, Fisheries and Maritime Affairs Minister Susi Pujastuti, and President Director of State Port Operator Pelindo II, R.J. Lino. They were accompanied by Danish Minister for Foreign Affairs Christian Jensen and Energy Utilities and Climate Minister Lars Christian Lilholt, as well as Danish Ambassador to Indonesia Kasper Klinge. On the occasion, Queen Margaret II said that more than 60 Danish companies have joined the visit and they represent such interesting sectors as maritime, agribusiness, clean tech and urban solution design and lifestyle.
Since 1928, when the MS Liza Maersk called at the port of Medan carrying coffee to New York, Danish vessels have frequently transported Indonesian products to markets across the world. It is symbolic and appropriate that the grand opening takes place on the fine and busy harbour of Jakarta. In our more modern and globalised world, the 11,000 kilometres of ocean and land that separate our two countries are no obstacle to building and maintaining strong bilateral and commercial ties.
On the same occasion, Minister Rizal said that Indonesia has a new maritime strategy based on fundamental pillars, namely maritime culture, maritime economy, maritime infrastructure, maritime security, and maritime diplomacy. He added the Indonesian government has been working to strengthen its maritime sector to become a global maritime axis. The visit by Danish royal couple is also to celebrate the 65th anniversary of the establishment of diplomatic relations between Indonesia and Denmark. On their 3-day state visit, they are visiting Jakarta, Surabaya, and Yogyakarta. Indonesia will continue the Indian Ocean Marine Association IORA chairmanship after Australian chairmanship from 2015-2017. It was stated by Indonesian representative for IORA in Mauritius Island, Firdaus Dahlan, to Air World Service in Padang, West Sumatra on Thursday. According to him, Indonesia will be IORA chairman for the next 2 years, hoping that it will lead to strengthen IORA member state cooperation in the next future.
Pertemuan Indian Ocean Rim Association di Padang kali ini adalah dalam rangka serah terima keketuaan.
The IORA meeting in Padang is to hand over Australian chairmanship to Indonesia for 2015-2017. We will be the chairman and it is hoped that Indonesia will be able to bring stronger cooperation among IORA member state in the next future.
Diharapkan tentunya oleh banyak negara-negara anggota, Indonesia dapat membawa IORA ke dalam penguatan kerjasama yang semakin meningkat ke depan tentunya.
Furthermore, Firdaus Dahlan added that IORA state members are optimistic to be able to create cooperation in various sectors, even if IORA belongs to a wide range of areas and social and economic differences. He also hoped that Indonesian chairmanship will be able to bring IORA cooperation into a higher level. The World Bank has stated that Indonesia still has better economic growth than other commodity exporting countries. Chief of the World Bank representative for Indonesia, Rodrigo Saffer, said while launching the Indonesian Economic Quarterly Report of October 2015 edition on Tuesday in Jakarta that Indonesia is facing the same challenge as other countries because of China's support towards economic rebalancing and U.S. preparation for the normalization of its monetary policy. The Indonesian government's efforts, including granting stimuli, reforming policies and improving the quality of its state spending, have helped the country overcome the global volatility, which has hampered economic growth. Rodrigo said that Indonesia's national gross domestic product GDP remained at 4.7% in the second quarter due to the weakening global trade, low commodity price, and slow investment and domestic consumption growth. The last item, Minister of Law and Human Rights Yasona Lawli affirmed that he and the relevant agency are studying the legal aspect of castration punishment for child rapists or pedophiles. He stated after attending the opening of ASEAN Law Minister meeting in Bali on Tuesday that there must be a standard set to reduce the libido of pedophiles through castration. Minister Lawli said that his minister is studying the matter with the relevant parties such as the Attorney General Office, the Minister of Women and Children Empowerment, Minister of Social Affairs and the Ministry of Health, non-governmental organizations and other related agencies. He remarked that the recourse on castration to reduce libido of pedophiles could be implemented, referring to a proposal on their need to issue a government regulation in lieu of law or purpu. The minister stated that it is also under study to decide whether sexual crimes against children come under emergency category. He affirmed that sexual crimes against children are grieved in nature and the victim suffer long-term trauma. That's news from the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta.
Listener, here is the commentary entitled Canada Under New Government of Liberal Party. Tension continues in the Middle East and there are no signs of ending soon. Tension also occurs in the North America. Perhaps this almost gets rid of attention from many people, as it is covered with the case of neighboring countries in the South. They are more concerned with the affairs of other countries compared with their own country. Recently, Canada has been in tension. The Conservative Party, which has ruled the British Dominion country in North America, must leave power that has been ruled for one decade. The Conservative side should acknowledge its defeat from Liberal Party in the federal election taking place on Monday, October 19, 2015. The result of vote counting showed that the Liberal Party won majority in the parliament with 183 seats. Meanwhile, the Conservative Party won only 99 parliament seats. Thus, the leadership of Stephen Harper's Conservative government should hand over the power to the Liberal Party. To be able to govern and occupy the seat of Prime Minister, at least 170 parliament seats are needed. The victory put an end to the ambitions Harper Liberal Party that still wants to lead Canada for the fourth time. The constitution of this country doesn't limit the term of office of Prime Minister. This defeat makes Harper resign as the chairman of the Conservative Party and makes the party become opposition along with the New Democratic Party that received 43 seats. Thus, the Liberal Party leader, Justin Trudeau, became a new Prime Minister for Canada. Justin is the son of Pierre Trudeau, the former Prime Minister of Canada during two periods, namely during the 70s and the 80s. The first policy of Prime Minister Justin is to withdraw fighter squadron of his country from ISIS military operations in Iraq and Syria. This decision has been told to the US President Barack Obama, who called Justin a few hours after the Liberal Party won the general election. Justin is committed to ending the Canadian mission in the Middle East. Although withdrawing the fighter squadron, Canada still places military trainers in the region. Peter Trudeau was a prime minister who served for nearly 11 years since taking power in 1968 and reserving prime minister in 1980 until mid-1984. The senior Trudeau died in 2000 at the age of 84 years and left important things in Canadian history. In the period, Canada enacted the Bill of Rights and made French language as one of their official language in Canada. Now, it's turn of junior Justin Trudeau as new Prime Minister of Canada to face different challenges on which economic downturn has also hit Canada. His promise to improve the country's economic situation. Moreover, a hard challenge for Justin is leaving an important legacy for history in Canada. Well, we are looking forward to the next situation of Canada, led by Justin Trudeau. Well, listener, that was commentary today.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You're still with us, RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia, on frequencies of 15150 kHz, 9525 kHz,
and 11785 kHz for English program. You can also listen to our broadcast on internet at en.voi.co.id.
Welcome back to Today in History, a daily segment of RRI World Service Voice of Indonesia, which brings back people and events from this day in the past as recorded in history. We start from an event on October 23, 1941, in World War II, Georgi Zhukov, handling the Red Army to defend, to restrain German to Russia. Georgi Konstantinov Zhukov. We start from an event on October 23, 1941, in World War II, Georgi Zhukov, handling the Red Army to restrain to Russia. Georgi Konstantinov Zhukov was a Soviet career officer in the Red Army who, in the course of World War II, played the most pivotal role in leading the Red Army drive through much of Eastern Europe to liberate the Soviet Union and other nations from the occupation of the Axis powers and ultimately to conquer Berlin. He is the most decorated general officer in the history of the Soviet Union and Russia. Amongst many notable generals in the World War II, Zhukov was placed at the top due to the number and scale of victories, and his talent in operational and strategic command was recognized by many people. Many famous military leaders in the world, such as Bernard Montgomery and Dwight D. Eisenhower, recognized Zhukov's great contributions in many important victories in the Second World War. On October 23, 1941, when Nazi troops closer to Moscow, Marshal Zhukov replaced Semyon Timoshenko in command of the Central Front and was appointed to organize the defense of Moscow. The successful Soviet counter-offensive in December 1941 drove the Germans back from the Soviet capital. On October 23, 2002, hostage crisis at the Moscow Theater by Chechen rebels. The Moscow Theater hostage crisis, also known as the 2002 North Ost Siege, was the seizure of the crowded Dubrovka Theater on October 23, 2002, by 40 to 50 armed Chechens who claim allegiance to the Islamic Militant Separatist Movement in Chechnya. They took 850 hostages and demanded the withdrawal of Russian forces from Chechnya and an end to the Second Chechen War. The siege was officially led by Mavsar Barayev. Due to the dispersion of the theater, special forces would have had to fight through 30 meters or 100 feet of corridor and attack up a well-defended staircase before they could reach the hall in which the hostages were held. All 40 of the attackers were summarily executed, presumably while unconscious, with no casualties. About 130 hostages died, including 9 foreigners, due to adverse reactions to the gas. All but 2 of the hostages who died during the siege were killed by the toxic substance pumped into the theater to subdue the militants. The use of the gas was widely condemned as heavy-handed, but the American and British governments deemed Russia's actions justifiable. On October 23, 2011, Marco Simoncelli, an Italian MotoGP racer, passes away. Marco Simoncelli was an Italian professional motorcycle racer. He competed in the Road Racing World Championship for 10 years from 2002 to 2011. He started in the 125cc class before moving up to the 250cc class in 2006. He won the 250cc World Championship with Gilera in 2008. After 4 years in the intermediate class, he stepped up to the MotoGP class with the Honda Gresini team. Simoncelli died in an accident during the 2011 Malaysian Grand Prix at Sepang on October 23, 2011, after being run over following his own fall on track. Listener, that was Today in History.
Focus, daily news and events.
Welcome to Focus. Today's edition will talk about government regulation in lieu of law is prepared to protect children. Listener to counter violence toward children is assessed getting more serious and need concrete steps to handle it. Therefore, President Joko Widodo prepares government regulation in lieu of law, Perpu, that regulates about children protection from physical and sexual abuses that increasingly rife in the country nowadays. One of Perpu is castration for offenders against children. The Perpu is hoped could be a deterrent effect to the perpetrators. Minister of Women Empowerment and Child Protection, Yohana Yembise, after closed meeting about prevention of violence against children at Presidential Office Jakarta on Tuesday, October 20th, said, the Perpu has been proposed by President and the draft being made. The minister said the Perpu is aimed to seek solution to bring maximum deterrent effect. When opened the meeting, President asked for a concrete action for the perpetrators of violence against children. The violence, including child trafficking, discrimination, drugs, and sexual harassment. To realize it, President stated that the government could not handle it alone. He asked support from all elements of people. President Joko Widodo added, the campaign and socialization of child protection should be more increased. On the same occasion, Attorney General M. Prasetyo said, the President's step is the state concrete effort to protect Indonesian children from sexual predators. Meanwhile, Minister of Health Nila Muluk said, castration could be committed through injection or neurosurgery of libido. She said, for further technical would be arranged later. Meanwhile, Chairman of Indonesian Child Protection Commission, Asrorun Niam Soleh, said, the commission appreciates the policy taken by President. According to him, there are four factors that triggering crime of violation against child. Firstly, parents' divorces. Secondly, easily access for pornography sites. Thirdly, rampant violence on television, film, and kids' games. And fourthly, light mechanism of law, so that the perpetrator tends to do repeatedly. On the other side, Vice Chairman of Committee 3 of People's Welfare Regional Leader Council, Fahmi Idris, said, in 1 year of Joko Widodo Yusuf Kala administration, the issue of child protection and health service still become a huge homework. 1 year period cannot be used a reference whether the government succeed or not, due to almost all field still laying the foundation. In the field of child protection, Fahmi Idris also said there is no a strong foundation yet. That was focus.
Listener, here's the headlines of several newspapers published today on Friday, October 23, 2015. We begin with Republika, which in its headline wrote, Santri has big contribution. President Joko Widodo declared National Santri Day in Istiqlal Mosque, Jakarta on Thursday. In the declaration, President Jokowi said that Santri had a big contribution in the history of Indonesia's independence. According to him, the Santri, with their own way, had planned a strategy to drive out the colonials away from the homeland. Santri, according to the president, also had taught us the importance of independence. So, based on that, the president issued the presidential decree on the National Santri Day. The president is also very optimistic that this will not create social wall or trigger polarization between Santri and non-Santri. On the contrary, according to Jokowi, the government's move on determining the National Santri Day will strengthen the nationalism spirit to unite the people in diversity. Meanwhile, Media Indonesia wrote, his victim children must evacuate. Indonesian Health Minister Nila Muluk in a press conference said 10 people died. Indonesian Health Minister Nila Muluk in a press conference said 10 people died indirectly caused by the haze disaster. According to her, if the condition persists, there will be more victims. Meanwhile, according to the data from the Health Crisis Center, due to the haze, there are more than 270,000 victims of acute respiratory infections until the end of September. The number increases 500 people weekly. Therefore, the government took action quickly. Their priority is evacuation of the victims, especially babies and children. On the other hand, Coordinating Minister for Political, Legal and Security Affairs Luhut Binsar Panjaitan said the government is coordinating and looking for a way to evacuate the baby and the children into a safer place. Listener, we continue with Tempo. The government prepares mass evacuation. Indonesian government prepared evacuation plan for the haze disaster victim due to the forest and land fires in several regions. Coordinating Minister for Political, Legal and Security Affairs Luhut Binsar Panjaitan said the evacuation will use the battleships from the Navy and vessels of PT Pelni. According to him, the evacuation onto the ships will be conducted only if there is no more safe places around the forest and land fire. Now, the government is still waiting for the report on air quality standard from the Health Ministry. Meanwhile, Social Affairs Minister Kofifa Indar Parawangsa said that the TNI commander will prepare 7 battleships, while Pelni will prepare 3 vessels for the evacuations. Listener, we end today's headline with Business Indonesia, Revaluation Incentive Launch. The government of Indonesia released another economic policy package in order to move the national economy. One of them is incentive for state-owned enterprises and private assets with a final tax 3-6%. Coordinating Minister for Maritime Affairs Rizal Ramli said the final income tax cut from the revaluation will encourage the companies to reassess their whole assets. This will then improve the financial structures, easing their businesses. Meanwhile, Bank Indonesia Governor Agus Martowardoyo said the facility to revaluate the assets gives chance for the corporation, including state-owned enterprises, to reassess their assets. With such policies, Agus is optimistic that national economic structure can improve. Well, listener, that was the headlines.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Chief Economist of the World Bank for Indonesia, Nadim Diop, predicted Indonesian gross domestic product GDP would expand 5.3% in 2016. Defense Minister Ramisa Riachudu officially opened State Defense Program, which was attended by 200 cadres in Jakarta on Tuesday. In his speech, Defense Minister Ramisa said that the end of the program was mentally building to make people of Indonesia have awareness to love the country, be loyal and ready to sacrifice for the nation and the state. Egyptians' interest to learn Indonesian language is higher. This was stated by Education and Culture Attaché of the Embassy of Republic of Indonesia in Cairo, Egypt, Fahmi Lukman, after officially opening the new class of Indonesian language program for the people of Egypt in Indonesian Cultural Center on Tuesday. The Denmark's Queen Margaret II and her husband Prince Consort Henry kick off their first visit to Indonesia at Tanjung Priok Port in Jakarta on Tuesday. During the visit, the royal couple met several officials from the government, such as Coordinating Minister for Maritime Affairs Rizal Ramli, Fisheries and Maritime Affairs Minister Susi Pujastuti, and President Director of State-owned Port Operator Polindo II, R.J. Lino. Indonesia will continue the Indonesian Ocean Marine Association IORA chairmanship after Australian chairmanship from 2015-2017. It was stated by Indonesian representative for IORA in Mauritius Island, Firdaus Dahlan, to Air World Service in Padang, West Sumatra, on Tuesday. The World Bank has stated that Indonesia still has better economic growth than other commodity exporting countries. Chief of the World Bank representative for Indonesia, Rodrigo Chavez, said while launching the Indonesian Economic Quarterly Report of October 2015 edition on Tuesday in Jakarta, that Indonesia is facing the same challenge as other countries because of China's support towards economic rebalancing and the U.S. preparation for the normalization of its monetary policy. Minister of Law and Human Rights Yasona Lawli affirmed that he and relevant agencies are studying the legal aspect of castration punishment for child rapists or pedophiles. He stated after attending the opening of ASEAN Law Minister meeting in Bali on Tuesday that there must be a standard set to reduce the libido or pedophiles through castrations. That's news in brief from the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You're still with us, RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia, on frequencies of 15150 kHz, 9525 kHz, and 11785 kHz for English program. You can also listen to our broadcast on internet at en.voi.co.id.
You're still tuning in to the Voice of Indonesia broadcasting daily from Jakarta. And listener, here is our next segment, Indonesian Wonder and Miscellany.
Let's listen to various information of Indonesian arts and culture in a daily segment of Indonesian Wonder.
Hello listener, it is a pleasure to meet you again in Indonesian Wonder, a daily segment featuring tourism, culinary, as well as art and culture from various regions across Indonesia. In today's edition, we'll introduce you to the Japan dance. So stay tuned. Listener, the 15th Mahakam Festival will be held on November 6 to 8, 2015 in East Kalimantan. The festival consistently highlights original and creative art and culture with the aim to preserve local cultural art. Art and culture that will be performed at the 2015 Mahakam Festival, among others, dance creations contest with three categories, namely the category of coastal dance, hinterland dance, and Japan dance category of primary school level. One of the local cultures that is performed is Japan dance. Now, we introduce you to Dance Japan or Japan dance as one of the local cultural community of East Kalimantan. Listener, Japan dance is a folk art of Kutai Kartanegara people in Marta Depura in East Kalimantan. The dance is influenced by Malay culture and Islam and growing in various areas along the coast and in the Mahakam River or beach area in East Kalimantan. Japan dance is one of the dances presented the Malay culture, which is dynamic, attractive, energetic and earthy. The dance is performed by female dancers. In the show, Japan dance is usually accompanied by tingkilan or music. Tingkilan music is one of the typical Kutai musical art. The music uses a stringed instrument or some sort of stringed instruments such as ketipung, beating instruments such as drums with smaller size and violin. It is also accompanied by a song called Pen Bertingkilan. Bertingkilan means blare. The songs are usually sung by two singers who shout at each other in dedicating the lyrics that contain advice or moral messages. Listener, as time goes by, the typical Kutai dances then followed not only by traditional music instruments, but also modern like piano. And Japan dance also experienced a lot of growth, which in showing Japan dance consists of two types, namely Japan Genyo Dance and Japan Aero Dance. Japan Aero Dance is a Croatian-Japan dance that does not leave the original motion, including a variety of tribute, waves, samba santangan, full samba, gengsot, and a variety of child. Aero in Kutai language means crowded and happy. Aero Japan dance performance is full of dynamic movements and full of happiness. While Japan Genjo Mahakam dance is one of creation dances of Japan dance, where most of the movement in the dance comes from the Japan dance, for example, wave motion, half samba, full samba, swing kicks, jalan kenyat, saluang mudik, and taktim motion. In general, the Japan Genjo Mahakam dance is a dynamic dance, attractive and energetic, but still understated, and represents the Malay culture. The show, the Japan dancers perform with the typical blend of Malay with Islamic nuances and combine with typical fashion of Indonesia. While dancing, the dancers is also equipped with a shawl. Japan dance is often showed at the cultural festival that was held by the local government in East Kalimantan as a form of preservation of local art. Besides, the dance can be found in a variety of cultural events, such as weddings and welcoming guests. Well, listener, that was Indonesian Wonder for today with the topic Japan Dance. We will meet again tomorrow with other interesting topics. Sampai jumpa.
Miscellany on Indonesia, a segment featuring various actual information.
Hello VOA listener, wherever you are, welcome back to Miscellany with me, Rahma. Today we present you the exotic kuda lumping or horse dance. Dance is one of Indonesian cultures. For people in Central Java, kuda lumping dance is really important. Jaranan and Jatilan is another kuda lumping dance. Horse is used in this dance. And the horse used in this dance is not the real horse, but it is a plaited bamboo and it looks like horse. In every performance, kuda lumping dance presents four fragments of dance, namely two types of buto lawas dance, senterewe dance, and begon putri dance. Some young dancers ride the bamboo horse and dance accompanied with music rhythm. In this part, buto lawas dancers can experience possession and they can be possessed by spiritual nature. Kuda lumping dance is indeed really famous among other Indonesian dances. that have magical power. When the dancers are possessed, this is the magical value. And the dancers even are served by glasses to be consumed, and they act like a horse. And to make the dancers aware from the possessions, usually there is a keeper who has power to do that. This keeper is called Warok. They make the dancers aware again. And in this part, this is the attraction of Kuda Lumping Dance. Although Kuda Lumping Dance is rarely performed completely, Kuda Lumping Dance can present particular exotic values for the audience. Although this dance is from Java Island, this dance is also inherited to Javanese people living in North Sumatra and in some areas out of Indonesia like Malaysia, Suriname, Hong Kong, Japan, and the US. There is no historical note that can explain the origin of this dance, only verbal heritage that is passed from generation to generation. Apart from the origin and the historical value, Kuda Lumping Dance reflects the spirit of heroism and military aspects of cavalieri. It can be seen in the rhythmic, dynamic, and aggressive movements through the movement of the plaited bamboo that looks like a horse amid a war. Well, VOA listener, that ends today's miscellany on the exotic Kuda Lumping Dance. I'm Rahma from RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia. Thank you for listening.
Meet again tomorrow with another miscellany on Indonesia.
Music Corner, presenting various kinds of Indonesian music and songs from the Voice of Indonesia.
Hello, listener of RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia, wherever you are. Welcome back with me, Rahma, in our regular segment, Music Corner, which introduces you Indonesian music, both traditional and modern ones. Today's edition presents you a dangdut singer, Ine Cynthia Anggraini, who was popular in 90s through her popular album, 5 Menit Lagi. Well, listener, to begin our show, here is a song by Ine Cynthia entitled 5 Menit Lagi, or 5 More Minutes. Happy listening. Listener, Ina Cynthia Anggraini, or known as Ina Cynthia, is an Indonesian dangdut singer who started enjoying fame since singing Lima Menit Lagi. Before having solo career, Ina Cynthia, who was born in Cianjur, West Java on August 15, 1971, was the personnel of the Duta, which stands for Delapan Diva Dangdut or Eight Dangdut Divas, and the personnel of Manis Manja Group. Ina Cynthia never stops working. Anyway, listener, before we move on, let's enjoy a song by Ina Cynthia entitled Salah Mencintaimu. Enjoy the song.
Sendiri, lupakan.
Listener, Ina Cynthia is a dangdut singer who has released many hits in the Indonesian music industry, like Memori Daun Pisang, Cinta Bukan Sayur Asem, Gaun Merah Jambu, Kacang Lupa Kulitnya, and many more, which were welcomed by dangdut lovers. Moreover, her songs got nominated in some awards. She also won Best Dangdut Group with Manis Manja Group. Well, listener, to end the program, we play you two songs by Ina Cynthia entitled Di Simpang Jalan and Gara-gara Di Kompori. Enjoy the songs and I'll see you again in another edition of Music Corner.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You can listen to our broadcast every day on frequencies of 15150 kHz, 9525 kHz,
and 11785 kHz for English program, or listen to audio on demand at en.voi.co.id. Send your criticism and suggestions to en.voi.co.id or send your letter to Voice of Indonesia, RRI World Service, Jalan Medan Merdeka Barat, No. 4 and 5, Jakarta, or P.O. Box 1157, Jakarta 10011, Indonesia. And join us on Facebook, Voice of Indonesia, and Twitter, VoI Indonesia.